Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. World-renowned conductor Benjamin Zander and the New England Conservatory abruptly ended an almost half-century-long working relationship last night when school officials discovered Zander had knowingly hired a registered sex offender to videotape NEC's Youth Philharmonic Orchestra over the past decade.
Zander does not deny knowing Peter Benjamin's history. In fact, Zander provided a testimonial at Benjamin's sentencing hearing 20 years ago. In 1994, Benjamin pleaded guilty to raping a boy.
For his part, Zander calls his dismissal a, quote, absolute tragedy, adding that Benjamin's done nothing for 20 years. But it also raises questions about just how much scrutiny private institutions are or should be giving to the past histories of contract employees. Joining us now is the reporter who broke the story in today's Boston Globe, Michael Resendiz. Michael, welcome to Radio Boston.
Hey, pleasure to be here.
So first of all, tell us, NEC apparently sent out an email or a letter to 6,500 parents last night informing them that Peter Benjamin, this level two registered sex offender, had been working as a contract employee for the New England Conservatory. But at that time, Maestro Zander's name didn't come into play. So how did all of this unfold that suddenly the two have parted ways?
Well, the school was informed in December by an individual whose name has been withheld that Peter Benjamin was a sex offender. The school checked it out and found out that was true and then conducted an investigation to determine exactly what the videographer had done, what he videotaped, and how he was hired, and whether faculty members knew he was a registered sex offender.
And what did they find out? I mean, apparently at least one faculty member, Benjamin Zander, knew.
Yeah, they found out that one faculty member knew, and right now, to their satisfaction, although the investigation is continuing, they don't believe that any other faculty members knew that the videographer, Peter Benjamin, was a registered sex offender. They believe that Zander was the only faculty member who knew about Peter Benjamin's history.
And he knew specifically because apparently Benjamin Zander had testified at a hearing about 10, 15, 20 years ago?
This was in 1993 when Peter Benjamin was about to be sentenced for his sex crimes. And there was a memorandum for lenient sentencing that was filed by Peter Benjamin's attorney. And attached to that memorandum are a series of testimonials from fairly prominent Bostonians, including Benjamin Zander, attesting that Peter Benjamin was a talented videographer and a good man in many respects.
Mm. And so what do we know about Peter Benjamin's crimes that put him on the sex offender list in the first place?
Well, we know that he served 5 years in prison for sex crimes against three teenage boys. One of them was raped, and it appears that he also videotaped them.
Videotaped them in rehearsals? No.
The circumstances are a little bit unclear, although I think the circumstances will be more clear later this afternoon and available in tomorrow's Globe. But at the moment, I can't say exactly what the circumstances were.
Yeah. Now, what about what Peter Benjamin was hired to do at the New England Conservatory? What do we know about that?
For the most part, he videotaped the performances of the youth orchestra, the Youth Philharmonic Orchestra that is part of the New England Conservatory. He videotaped concerts and rehearsals. He also videotaped classes that Benjamin Zander gave at the Walnut Hill School in Natick. It's a boarding school for fine arts students. And in addition, he videotaped some videotapes for the archives of the conservatory. But for the most part, he was videotaping the youth orchestra, which was conducted by Zander.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were able to briefly speak with Benjamin Zander himself, I believe, yesterday. What did he say?
Zander says that he did nothing wrong, essentially. that Peter Benjamin has not reoffended in the nearly 20 years since he was indicted, and that therefore there was no problem in hiring him as a contractor, and that he was terminated wrongly.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, one of the reasons why this is such a huge story in the Boston area today is Benjamin Zander himself, the maestro at New England Conservatory. He's a major name in classical music circles. He was, as you called him in the Globe, a marquee instructor there at the New England Conservatory, world-renowned, and also maybe one of the world's most charismatic champions of classical music, you know, as a force for art and creativity in people's lives. I just want to play a little bit of tape of Benjamin Zander himself. This has nothing to do with the case we're talking about today, but just to give you a flavor of his charisma. This is from a TED Talk he gave back in 2008.
Probably a lot of you know the story of the two salesmen who went down to Africa in the 1900s. They were sent down to find if there was any opportunity for selling shoes, and they wrote telegrams back to Manchester. And one of them wrote, "Situation hopeless, stop, they don't wear shoes." And the other one wrote, "Glorious opportunity, they don't have any shoes yet." Now, there's a similar situation in the classical music world, because there are some people who think that classical music is dying, and there are some of us who think you ain't seen nothing yet.
That's Maestro Benjamin Zander speaking at the TED conference in 2008. Michael Resendiz, what are you getting in terms of reaction for people when they hear that Zander has now left New England Conservatory? Do they see it as a loss?
Yeah, I think a lot of people see it as a loss. Because, as you said, he is world-renowned, and he's very well-known, by the way, as a motivational speaker, and he carries the banner for the popularization of classical music, and a lot of people appreciate that. At the same time, I think some other people are saying, well, what was he thinking by hiring a videographer with a criminal history of sex crimes against young people to videotape young people at the conservatory?
Hmm. Well, listeners, what is your reaction to this story? Was the New England Conservatory right to let Benjamin Zander go? Or maybe wrong for perhaps not doing a thorough background check on the videographer in the first place? What is an employer's responsibility in a case like this? And is Maestro Benjamin Zander's departure a loss for Boston? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Michael Resendiz joins us. He is the reporter for the Boston Globe who broke this story this morning. Michael, if you could just stand by for a second, I just want to mention to listeners that we did put in requests to speak with both Benjamin Zander and leaders of the New England Conservatory today. Everyone declined, but the New England Conservatory directed us to Karen Schwartzman. She's a consultant and now the spokesperson for the NEC on this case. Anthony talked with her just a little while ago.
When did the conservatory become aware that Peter Benjamin, who'd been contracted as a videographer for the school, was a convicted level 2 sex offender?
We became aware that we had a videographer who was providing services as a vendor in mid-December when we received a phone call from a concerned citizen who saw the videographer on our campus and recognized him to be someone who had a criminal past.
Right. And does the New England Conservatory have any evidence that this videographer did anything wrong or inappropriate while working with the youth orchestra?
No. In fact, not only do we not have any evidence, we have never received any complaint suggesting such. So, no, that is not the concern.
Hmm. Well, then tell me what the concern is.
The concern is that we run a program on Saturdays through our prep school, which caters to the musical interests of people who are between the ages of 4 and 18. And when you run an organization that serves young people, you have a duty to maintain their care and their safety as best you can. And I think it would be fair to say that no prudent institution that serves children would ever knowingly welcome onto its campus a person who has a criminal past, particularly when the crimes that that person committed were crimes against children.
Well, let me follow up this way. What is the New England Conservatory's policy with regard to hiring people or contracting people to work at the school? As you mentioned, there are children there. Is it standard policy for the school to conduct a background check, specifically to check the sex offender registry, for example?
Well, we do conduct background checks, as all institutions do, and we conduct background checks routinely for all faculty, staff, and volunteers. About 2 years ago, the law was changed to require organizations that serve young people to background check vendors. This particular vendor had been a vendor with us for as long as 10 years. So while we recognize a lapse that we did not go back and do a background check on him, our protocol is now to background check all vendors as well as all other staff, faculty, and volunteers.
I see. And this videographer that we're talking about would be regarded as a vendor?
No question.
But what I'm not clear about is you said it is now your policy to go back and do that, to do background checks. You're saying just since this vendor was terminated, essentially.
I think there's a question about whether or not we are an organization that primarily serves minors, because the New England Conservatory is mostly a college. We are not primarily an organization that serves young people. So it's not clear that the law requires us to do background checks on vendors, but our internal policy requires now that we do so.
I see. But as far as you know, this particular videographer was not vetted either before he was contracted to work at the school or any time since, right?
That's absolutely true.
Okay. Conductor Benjamin Zander defended his decision to hire this videographer. He told the Boston Globe and noted that he was convicted for sex crimes nearly 20 years ago, claimed that he has never reoffended, and talks about his own termination coming as a terrible shock to him. Is he right about that? I mean, in other words, to point out that this videographer has never reoffended, and if so, was the conservatory right to fire him and to fire Zander?
Well, I'm not going to comment on what Benjamin Zander said. I will say that I don't think any one of us can ever know whether someone who has a record as a Level 2 sex offender has ever reoffended. I don't think there's any way for any of us to know that. In addition, I don't think that there's any way for any of us to know whether someone might reoffend. To me, that's not a risk worth taking.
Zander had a joint appointment with the New England Conservatory and the Walnut Hills School. Does his dismissal from NEC mean he is no longer music director at Walnut Hill?
I think that's a question better posed to Walnut Hill.
Well, Walnut Hill said it was a question better posed to you.
Oh, well, if they want to engage Ben Zander apart from his relationship with the New England Conservatory, that's entirely up to them. But he has left our organization. That's all I can say. I can tell you that he has left our organization effective yesterday.
All right. Well, Karen Schwartzman, thank you very much. We appreciate your time today.
No problem.
That's Karen Schwartzman. She's a consultant and now the spokesperson for the New England Conservatory on this case.
Well, we are talking about the departure of Maestro Benjamin Zander from the New England Conservatory after the NEC discovered Zander knew a videographer he had hired was a Level 2 registered sex offender. Michael Resendiz is the reporter for the Boston Globe who broke this story. He's with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with your calls and an expert on employment law around the issue of sex offenders in the workplace. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston. This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking about world-renowned conductor Benjamin Zander and his departure from the New England Conservatory after NEC discovered Zander had knowingly hired a registered sex offender to videotape NEC's Youth Philharmonic Orchestra. Michael Resendiz is the reporter from the Boston Globe who broke this story. He is with us. And listeners, what do you think? What are the obligations of an employer in a case like this when it comes to hiring sex offenders? And do you think Benjamin Zander's departure from Boston is a loss for the city? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'd like to reiterate that we did reach out and request an interview with Benjamin Zander himself. He declined but sent this statement, which reads in part, "I do want to emphasize categorically that I would never knowingly do anything that would in any way put my students in harm's way. I have had a wonderful, rewarding career with the New England Conservatory. I am deeply sorry that it has ended this way. I have been privileged to help nurture the careers of so many gifted and dedicated students during the past 45 years. That from a statement from Benjamin Zander. We got a lot of calls. Let's go to one of them. Julia is calling from Wrentham. You're on the air, Julia.
Hi. I play the clarinet, and I'm an NEC prep student. I'm not a part of the YPO, but I've seen a lot of my friends are there, and I just know that Ben Zander really inspires them, and I've seen rehearsals, and just watching him in front of the podium, the music comes alive, and I just think that he's one of the most special conductors that I've ever seen, and I think it's just really sad to see him go.
Julia, thank you so much for your call. I'd like to bring in another voice into this conversation. She's Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz. She's a lawyer with Schwartz Hanum in Andover. She specializes in education and employment, and she works with several prep schools and universities across Massachusetts, but not the New England Conservatory, we should say. Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you very much, Magda.
So I guess my first question to you sort of picks up where we left off with Michael, and we'll get back to you in a second, Michael, but what is an employer's responsibility in cases like this? Is a background check sort of par for the course, or should be?
That is a great question. And first, what I want to say and make very clear is that the obligations of an employer vary depending on the industry. So any industry that has a vulnerable population will have higher threshold and a higher level of responsibility than others. So, for example, schools, camps, hospitals, nursing homes, assisted living facilities, anybody with the elderly or the children will have a much higher threshold. And in those cases, there is a legal obligation to do a criminal background check. What gets super complicated is that in Massachusetts, there is no obligation to check the sex offender registry. And there is not always a complete overlap between the criminal record and the sex offender record. So, for example, if I'm a private school in Massachusetts and I check the criminal record, I will get all of the Massachusetts crimes. But if I have a New Hampshire sex offender, that will not come up. Hmm. And there is no requirement to check.
Michael Resendiz, did anyone at New England Conservatory that did speak with you, if anyone at all, indicate that doing a check on a sex offender registry was even part of their hiring process?
No, I didn't get into their hiring procedures with them, but I would suggest that it is common sense. If you're running an institution that caters to young people, that you would try to screen your employees for people who had committed crimes against young people.
Hmm. But Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz, if it's so piecemeal, essentially 50 different states having 50 different registries, is it realistic for an employer to do such a thing?
That's a great question. I will tell you that from a moral perspective, we represent over 70 independent schools, and I tell them all they should be doing the sex offender check in addition to the criminal record. So just to make it clear. But your question is a great one. The state laws vary dramatically, both in terms of access to this information and in terms of the requirements. There is a national registry that's been put together by the Department of Justice. Anyone can log on and put in a name and check it. It is not guaranteed to be complete, but there is at least the option.
Well, Michael Resendiz, we should also note that because the videographer, who's the level 2 sex offender in this case, Peter Benjamin, he actually served time at a correctional facility in Massachusetts, so he would have a Corey report. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's true.
And yet NEC didn't do a Corey check on him either, as far as we know.
Apparently not. Apparently it was Benjamin Zander contracted with Peter Benjamin on his own, mm-hmm. and did not inform the school authorities about any background check that he may or may not have conducted. I think Benjamin Zander's argument might be stronger if he had told school officials that Peter Benjamin had a criminal background and allowed school officials to make a determination one way or another whether he was appropriate.
But as far as we know, he didn't do that.
That's right.
As Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz, does it matter in this case that Peter Benjamin, the person who has the record here, that he was a contract employee? He wasn't a full-time member of the New England Conservatory faculty or staff.
It's actually a classic example of the sort of a case that can go bad. So from my perspective, it makes no difference in terms of the institution's obligation to check his criminal and sex offender record. And frankly, I think that's what a lot of this case will come down to, is did in fact NEC have proper institutional protocols so that they were checking everybody on their campus, no matter how that person had access to the campus, independent contractor, consultant, employee, chaperone, volunteer, faculty, staff, everybody needs to be checked.
Well, Michael, apparently the letter that NEC sent out to school officials said that they're now taking all appropriate measures to, quote, ensure that the maximum possible safeguards are in place for students.
Yes, I think it's just as Karen Schwartzman said. I mean, in the wake of this incident, in the wake of this discovery, I think the conservatory has reviewed its policies and updated policies and will apparently do everything it can to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Let's take a couple calls. Mike is calling from Medford. You're on the air, Mike.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I found out last year that a guy I had worked with for about 8 years was a convicted sex offender down south. And some Google research found out that he did some time, you know, and then did some time at home. And I'd worked with him for 8 years. It never came up. And I think people should be allowed second chances. You know, rehabilitation can work in some instances. And, you know, he's in senior management in my company, and he's a great guy to work with.
And so he's senior management, so I presume you're not the person who hired him.
No, I'm
not. Does it make a difference to you that in this case, Mike, we're talking about someone who ended up working with kids, and that was his original crime some 20 years ago, was a crime against a child?
Yeah, I personally think it does make a difference. I mean, I also think that criminals who are convicted and serve their time, if they rehabilitate themselves and can show they've rehabilitated themselves, they deserve another shot. But I'm not sure that someone like Peter Benjamin deserved another shot in a context where he would be working with young people.
Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz, what do you make about that? I mean, are there a separate set of rules or actual legal guidelines for institutions who deal, at least in part, with children?
There are a whole number of guidelines out there. They vary state to state. And what we strongly recommend that each school do is think about what they're comfortable with on campus. Many schools will say, we do not want to hire sex offenders. Now, with your caller, for example, who mentioned someone in senior management, in a different industry, it may be that the sex offender doesn't pose a threat. But if you can imagine someone videotaping children who may have unmonitored access to children, that's going to be a much higher threshold threat.
We are talking about the departure of Maestro Benjamin Zander from the New England Conservatory after NEC discovered that Zander had knowingly hired a man who was a level 2 registered sex offender in Massachusetts. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Sarah is calling from Jamaica Plain. You're on the air, Sarah.
Hi, Megna. Thanks for taking my call.
No problem. What's your thought?
I'm a little bit confused as to why Benjamin Zander has become a sort of scapegoat in all of this. We're hearing from the rep from NEC that laws have recently changed. They've recently decided to make sure that no one they're hiring, including vendors, is, you know, on the sex offender list. I don't understand if they went to Benjamin Zander and said, we've changed our rules, we need to fire this person, and Benjamin Zander said no, and that's why he got fired. But it doesn't seem like they gave him a chance. They just decided to change the rules, found out this person was a sex offender, and then also fired the person that hired him.
Sarah,
you know, I think that...
Sorry, Sarah, I just wanted to get an answer to your question, if we could. Thank you so much for your call. Michael Resendiz, did NEC suggest to you that they even asked Zander for his opinion on this matter?
Well, the conservatory would not discuss at all any of the actions it took with Zander because it's a personnel issue. And legally, I don't know if they were allowed to discuss it with me. But they didn't discuss with me any of the specific actions that they took with regard to Zander. I mean, they may have had a conversation with him. They may not have had a conversation with him. They simply didn't speak to that.
Let's take another call. Jay is calling from Belmont. You're on the air, Jay.
Hello. I am also confounded that Ben Zander was fired, or whatever you want to call it. First of all, I have played under him as an amateur, and he's an absolutely brilliant conductor. And what about the sort of seems this retribution? There have been three people, very important intellects or artists Boston community, Ben Zander, Goodwin Kearns, and Sarah Caudill, who gave affidavits for this man who went to prison. Now, what is the point of prison if one isn't given another chance afterwards.
Jay, thank you so much for your call. I want to let Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz take a shot at answering that question. I mean, that is a big issue overhanging all of this. At what point in time, when someone has been convicted of a crime, served the time that's mandated by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, is this person allowed or should be allowed fully back into full employment regardless of where that employment is?
It's a great question, Magna, and there's really no simple, clear guidance on it. It's why we come back to saying that each institution ought to have a written policy in place with guidelines that spell this out. So, for example, a school might say it's okay to have a sex offender in these 10 jobs, but not in these 20 jobs. And they'll take a look at the EEOC guidance on this, which says consider the crime, the gravity of it, and when it happened in thinking through whether it's okay to let this person back onto campus.
I want to get one more call in here. Scott is calling from Haverhill. You're on the air, Scott.
Hi, Magna. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, as a teacher at a high school, I'm responsible for running proms and things like that. What is my responsibility in terms of vetting the outside vendors that I hire, like DJs or prom staff or things like that?
Thanks so much for a great question, Scott. Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz.
Absolutely. Excellent question. In general, what I would say is that you do not have the obligation to actually do the background checks. You have an obligation to work with your institution and make sure that there is a solid contract between your institution and the vendor and that they're doing the checks and making the reps and warranties. And if, in fact, you want to do the checks yourself, you need to go through a complex legal process to do that. Good thought, though. Keep checking.
Michael Resendiz, last question goes to you. I mean, this the story has huge ramifications and a ripple effect throughout the arts and classical music and education communities here in Greater Boston. Do you have a sense of what the beginning of those effects might be? And can you give us even the tiniest bit of clue of what we might see from your reporting coming out of the Globe tomorrow?
Well, first of all, I want to make one point that hasn't been made yet, which is that it is believed, based on evidence, that people who commit sex crimes reoffend at a higher rate than people who commit other sorts of crimes. And I think that's one of the reasons for the concern about Benjamin Zander here. And also, the state has essentially ruled that he is at a moderate risk of reoffending again. Mm-hmm. So that may also be why the conservatory acted as swiftly as it did.
And any hint as to what we might see from your reporting tomorrow?
I think we'll see some more about the more about the testimonials that were given on Peter Benjamin's behalf, and perhaps more about the circumstances of his crimes.
Well, Michael Resendiz, reporter for the Boston Globe, thank you so much for your reporting, and thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Sarah Goldsmith-Schwartz, lawyer for Schwartz, Hannum in Andover, thank you so much for being with us as well.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And listeners, thank you as always. And do continue this conversation at radioboston.org. Up next, more news of this week, fundraising in the Senate race, state budget problems, and a big new casino developer joins the competition for a Massachusetts gambling license. And we will close this particular segment with Benjamin Zander conducting the NEC Youth Philharmonic through a rehearsal a little late last year when the young musicians were practicing for a world premiere performance of Silvio Amato's Illuminescence. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.